This public radio podcast is supported by Constellation Energy, a global provider of fuels, power, and energy services, committed to environmentally sound, energy efficient, and sustainable energy solutions. Constellation Energy, the way energy works. And by Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, shrm.org. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937, Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
This might be a question better put to Adam Smith, but how do you regulate things like stability and discipline in a free market? Smith's not around anymore, so Henry Paulson took a shot today. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by MassMutual, also the proud sponsor of Retirement Revolution, on PBS on Monday, March 31st at 10 p.m. Eastern. Sustainability coverage supported by Calvert, mutual funds, college savings, and retirement investments in companies committed to responsible environmental, social, and governance practices. Calvert.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Monday today, the very last day of March 2008. Great to have you with us. Adam Smith's best-known work, On the Wealth of Nations, ran five volumes and I don't know how many pages. So odds are he did use the phrase market stability in there someplace. But Smith had nothing at all on Henry Paulson. The Treasury Secretary used the word stability 21 times today as he announced the administration's proposal for new financial market rules and regulations. The general idea, Mr. Paulson said, was to simplify things, but his plan touches on almost everybody involved in finance. Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale took a stroll over to the Treasury Department this morning. He's got the first part of our story.
The nation's banking elite filed into the Treasury Department's marble-walled cash room with an air of anticipation. One executive said he was there to see history being made. And Secretary Paulson made clear he, too, has his eye on the long term and not on a quick fix for the current shortage of credit. His blueprint has been a year in the making. He said the result is a comprehensive restructuring of a system that's not keeping up with modern finance.
We have five federal deposit institution regulators in addition to state-based supervision. The bulk of these regulatory responses made sense at the time they were created, but as we look at today's financial markets, the lack of a comprehensive design is clear.
The blueprint would consolidate regulators into three broad areas. A new agency would be in charge of business conduct and consumer regulation. Paulson also recommends the federal government take over state jurisdiction of the insurance industry, and he would expand the Federal Reserve Board's monetary tools to stabilize markets.
This market stability regulator's job sounds difficult, and I will assure you it is. No regulator can prevent all instability and market turmoil, and this one won't either. I would expect that we will continue to go through periods of market stress every 5 to 10 years.
One lesson learned from the current credit crisis, Paulson's blueprint asks Congress to approve a mortgage origination commission to license mortgage lenders and establish minimum standards for loan security. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
All right, so that's what the Treasury Secretary plan will do. There is just as much, maybe more, that it won't, like rein in the loosely regulated hedge fund industry or crack down on things like, and if you've heard these before, stop me, mortgage-backed securities or credit default swaps. Marketplace's Amy Scott has more now on what Henry Paulson didn't say.
Under Paulson's plan, the Fed will have new powers to peer into the books of investment banks and hedge funds, but only when they pose a threat to the financial system. Karen Shaw Petru advises financial services firms. She says today her clients are happy.
They welcome the fact that the role of the Federal Reserve in governing their operations is as light as it could possibly be in the context of recent developments.
Maybe too light, according to others on Wall Street. Chris Lowe is chief economist with FTN Financial. He says if the Fed wants to prevent another Bear Stearns, it can't wait till after the red flags are raised.
It's hard to imagine how the Fed can prevent distress if they don't have regulatory oversight during the periods of calm that precede problems.
Other critics worry the Securities and Exchange Commission could end up weaker. The blueprint would give stock exchanges more power to police themselves. Kurt Eggert teaches law at Chapman University. He says Wall Street also got a pass on subprime. He says lenders wouldn't have made so many risky loans if they hadn't been able to sell them into a poorly regulated market.
To fix the problem, I think you have to regulate how the loans are packaged and securitized, because that's what's driving the bus.
But Wall Street's sigh of relief may be temporary. Members of Congress are looking at solutions to the mortgage and credit crises, and the president's working group on financial markets should recommend its own reforms in the next few months. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Secretary Paulson came right out and said as much this morning, although a quick look at the calendar would have told you the same thing. Domestic politics being what they are in a presidential election year, nothing much is going to happen with this plan anytime soon. Joe Grunfest used to sit on the Securities and Exchange Commission. He's at Stanford Law School now. Professor Grunfest, thanks for being with us.
Pleasure to join you.
You know, there's that saying in Washington, the president proposes, Congress disposes. What are lawmakers going to do with this one?
Well, it's going to be quite a while, Kai. Let's remember what happened in the process of creating the Homeland Security Department. There we had a terrorist attack on the United States, and it took Congress several years to figure out how to reorganize a group of various agencies and put them together into a new department. So however long it took to put together the Department of Homeland Security, and however painful and difficult that process was, I think it's safe to project that it'll take longer to put in place these measures in the financial markets, and that the process will be even more difficult and more political than what we've already experienced.
What are your thoughts about giving the Fed all this power? It is one of the most opaque, not quite secretive, but certainly tough to decipher organizations in Washington. And here the administration wants to give them more power.
Well, you know, that's going to be part of the debate that Washington will have. It is, I think, very important that there be a body that is politically distinct from the Congress and the administration that deals with the question of control of money supply, interest rates, and all of those issues, because we know from experience in many different countries that a great deal of mischief can happen if politicians get control over central banks.
Let me spread this out a little bit to some of the other agencies and organizations that were mentioned in Secretary Paulson's speech today, specifically the SEC and the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, the proposal to merge them. How's that going to go down, do you think?
Well, I think that's going to be about as easy as finding peace in the Middle East. The futures markets have been at odds with the securities markets for years. And if anyone thinks that it's going to be easy to bridge that gap, I think they simply have no experience in terms of the history of that debate in Washington, D.C.
But when they start digging into this stuff, I mean, members of Congress are going to find things that they like and things that they don't.
Absolutely no doubt about it. And one of the things that they're going to find that they don't like is that when you consolidate these agencies, it can actually affect the flow of money to political campaigns in Washington. For example, most people don't realize that the Commodity Futures Trading Commission is overseen by the agriculture committees up on Capitol Hill. And it's because they have that oversight that many of the large investment banks that actually trade in financial instruments and really don't care that much about soybeans and pork bellies wind up visiting with senators on the Ag Committee and contributing substantially to senators on the Ag Committee.
You spent some time on the SEC in Washington. Let me ask you to do a gut check here and tell me what you think of this plan to begin with.
Well, you know, I think there's a great deal of benefit that can be had from rationalizing the rather arcane, baroque, balkanized structure that we have in Washington, D.C. But at the end of the day, I really think the question goes to the quality of regulation rather than the quantity and the allocation of responsibility. As we wind up working our way through this battle, I think we have to keep our eyes on the prize, and that is, are we moving to a world of smarter, cost-efficient regulation, or are we just going to be piling on additional requirements that, at the end of the day, don't make the financial world a better or safer place for anyone?
Joe Grunfest teaches law at Stanford University. He's the director of the Rock Center for Corporate Governance there. He was an SEC commissioner as well. Professor Grunfest, thanks for your time.
Been a pleasure.
Wall Street brought its first quarter to a close. Today, it was the worst 3 months investors have seen in more than 5 years. We will have the gory details when we do the numbers. There are a lot of moving parts to the plan Henry Paulson released this morning. There are the economic pieces John and Amy told us about. There's the political piece I talked about with Joe Grunfest. And there is the public relations piece. Commentator Robert Rice says Secretary Paulson made a good sales pitch, but he was short on substance.
It's been called the broadest overhaul of Wall Street regulation since the Great Depression. But look closely at the proposal announced this morning by Treasury Chief Hank Paulson, and you'll find a thin veneer of regulatory filigree designed to appease a public outraged by the mismanagement of its savings and the taxpayer-financed bailout of Wall Street's well-padded executives, but also, sadly, designed to accomplish just about nothing. Paulson rearranges and consolidates lots of regulations and seems to beef up the oversight responsibilities of the Fed. But the Fed would not routinely examine the books of investment banks and hedge funds the way bank examiners now scrutinize regular banks. And agencies like the SEC would actually lose some of their current authority. Most significantly, the proposal doesn't call for investment banks, hedge funds, and other currently unregulated financial institutions to hold capital assets proportional to the risks they're taking on. That's the case even though the Fed now has subjected taxpayers to the risk of bailing out any large financial institution that gets into trouble because that financial institution doesn't have enough capital to back up its risky bets. Even though two-thirds of subprime mortgages issued in the last 5 years originated with non-banks that have little or no capital requirements. And even though 80% of all lending today is from unregulated banks that hold almost no capital assets. Paulson says he doesn't blame the current regulatory structure for current market turmoil. Well, Hank, if it's not the current Wild West take-any-risk-with-other-people's-money non-regulatory structure we have now, how do you explain the housing bubble and the credit meltdown and the taxpayer bailout of Wall Street? How exactly are your proposed fixes going to prevent another crisis? Hank Paulson's discussion paper is not broad. It's not an overhaul. And heaven forbid, if we're facing another Great Depression, it will do absolutely zilch to head it off.
Robert Reich was Secretary of Labor for President Clinton. Now he teaches public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. His latest book is called Supercapitalism. Send us your thoughts online as best. Our website is marketplace.org. Corn crop's going to be down this year. Soybeans are going to be up, or at least that's the Department of Agriculture's best guess. The USDA prospective planting report came out today. It's the government's official estimate of what's going to be grown and how much of it. The report's a big deal because supply helps determine, yes, prices, which helps determine how much farmers are going to pocket come harvest time. And as they're getting ready for the planting season, those farmers are trying to navigate some complicated finances. From Chicago Public Radio, Adrian Hill reports.
Pete Tecampi farms in Lake County, Illinois, north of Chicago. He's a big guy with a low laugh and a shiny red truck that he's pretty proud of.
It's the new ethanol-burning truck that burned 85% ethanol and 15% gas, and that was last year's bean crop.
Last year was a good year for Tecampi. He had a big soybean harvest and an even bigger corn harvest, and prices for both were high. He's got big plans for this year, too. He wants to buy some new farm equipment, maybe a tractor. But that's down the road. Right now, he's thinking about planting. He's planning on 275 acres of corn and as many acres of soybeans. Corn costs more to grow and harvest, so he's cutting back a little on that crop this year. He's also got 60 acres of wheat in the ground that's just starting to peek out of the field. And he's trying to make heads or tails of the fluctuations in the market prices of all three. Tecampi says he's doing his best to hedge his bets. He's already pre-sold some of his 2008 corn and bean harvest.
You're really gambling. Hopefully we'll be able to plant it and get a crop. We're hoping, I'm probably at the max I would sell this early.
Pre-selling crops is one of the gambles farmers have to consider. If the price goes up or if they can't deliver on the crop, it can hurt their bottom line. They've also got to think about what other farmers might grow. Too much of one thing means prices drop. Too little means prices rise. And they need to consider the cost of seed, fertilizer, and fuel in picking crops to grow. Tecampi says the costs for fertilizer and tractor fuel are way up.
Every day I look at that the fuel or diesel fuel in the gas stations, and I'm thinking, man, I should have pulled that trigger 6 weeks ago. Nitrogen, I got that booked. Fertilizer's booked and paid for in December. But I wasn't smart enough to do the fuel.
Greg Keppen is the manager of the Lake County Farm Bureau. He says farmers have no choice but to shoulder the higher overhead costs.
Those inputs go in, whether it's going to be a good year or a bad year, the inputs are going to be there. The price that they're going to get paid at the market is dependent on what's going to happen come harvest time.
Keppen says farmers are poring over complicated calculations and often making educated guesses to get just the right mix of crops.
You know, it's up to the farmer. It's that crystal ball that they'd like to see. Where's that? Where's the corn and bean going to mean the most to them in the end?
Farming's also about those things you can't calculate, like the geese that chomped TCampy's wheat crop last year, and the weather. There are still piles of ice and snow on the ground in mid-March in Lake County. TCampy says that'll set planting back a little.
Mother Nature can come and give us a nice hot summer, and it'll catch up.
Do you like that, being dependent on the weather that way?
Well, I must, or I wouldn't be here, you know. And like I said, I started farming in 60. That's I've been doing it every year.
He says in some ways, this year is like all the rest. You just have to wait and see. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
Coming up, networks do the dog and pony shows on the cheap.
CBS is going to still have a big, showy presentation, but they're not going to have the shrimp.
But first, let's do the numbers. Stocks managed to cap a miserable quarter with a modest rally today, lifting the Dow Industrials 46 points, a third of 1%, to finish at 12,262. The NASDAQ climbed 17 points, 0.75%, to end at 2279. The S&P 500 tacked on 7 points, 0.5%, closed at 1322. So exactly how bad were the first 3 months of the year on Wall Street? The Dow has plunged more than 7.5%. The NASDAQ is down 14% since the 1st of January. The S&P 500 has suffered through its worst quarter in 5.5 years, losing almost 10% of its value. Financials did well today on the mere prospect of financial regulation. Wachovia shares gained almost 4%. Citigroup stock rose nearly 3%. Merrill Lynch added 2%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Cargill. Collaborate, create, succeed. This is how Cargill works with customers. Stories online at CargillCreates.com. By Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals. 888 Vanguard. And by Clarkson Potter's The Splendid Table's How to Eat Supper, the cookbook inspired by the radio program for people who love to eat. Available April 8th. Each song we choose for the rundown on Marketplace is there for a reason. If you hear one that resonates, you can find out what it is on our website. Head to marketplace.org and check out the songs on the right side of the screen. There's also a link to an online store where you can buy each song.
Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at events coming up Tuesday. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on construction spending for February. In Detroit, automakers release sales figures for March. And the House Energy Independence and Global Warming Committee talks to top execs from Exxon, Shell, BP, and others. They'll discuss prices, profits, and the need for renewable fuels. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. You know, the government can regulate markets all at once, but if investors want to sell, they're going to sell. Shares of Merck and Schering Plough hit record lows today. Traders dumped the drug makers after news yesterday about cholesterol-lowering medications the two made and marketed together. The drugs lowered cholesterol all right, but they didn't do much for other symptoms of heart disease, and they might even have made them worse. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
Cholesterol comes from two sources, food and family. Vitorin treats two sources.
Sounds good, doesn't it? When Vitorin and Zetia came on the market, they were heralded as the new miracle drugs for lowering cholesterol. Lots of people saw that ad. They asked their doctors for the new drugs. Last year, sales climbed to more than $4 billion, and that's just in the U.S.
There was quite a lot of it. You could maybe even call it irrational exuberance for this drug.
That's Yale cardiologist Harlan Krumholz. He was on the panel that issued a report on the drugs yesterday. Krumholz says the problem with Vitorin and Zetia is while they lower cholesterol, they don't do anything about the plaque in arteries that can cause strokes and heart attacks. So why are we just finding out about this now? Cardiologist Stephen Nissen of the Cleveland Clinic says the Food and Drug Administration has given fast-track approval to drugs without requiring extensive studies.
With very aggressive marketing, physicians have been led to prescribe these drugs without ever having the necessary data on things like death, heart attack, stroke.
But Dr. Nissen says Congress has given the FDA new powers. Now it can require more drug safety studies and issue fines if drug makers don't disclose the results of studies gone awry.
There's a lot of power there for the agency to require pharmaceutical companies to keep us informed about safety issues with drugs, and there certainly are greater enforcement powers.
The question is how the FDA uses those powers. Sometimes drugs need to be fast-tracked, say for life-saving medications. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Cholesterol drugs were bad on Wall Street today. Choo-choo trains were pretty good, though. The Dow Transportation Index, rather, picked up almost 0.8%. You know, railroads haul consumer goods all over the place, so train traffic is one way to measure consumer demand. As you might expect, those figures do reflect a softening domestic economy, and imports are down. But Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports business still hasn't gone off the rails.
Housing woes have affected rail traffic. Shipments of lumber and wood products are down 20% from a year ago. And consumer worries are evident in car shipments. Motor vehicles are down 7%. Tom White is with the Association of American Railroads.
Ever since the dollar began to weaken, the volume of traffic has dropped off. And so far this year, we're down about 4% from last year.
But while imports from Asia have tapered off, the weak dollar has boosted exports of coal and grains. And White says high fuel prices make rail transport more attractive.
Our fuel efficiency is better than 3-to-1 advantage over highway. We can move a ton of freight 423 miles on a single gallon of fuel.
Rail companies beat Wall Street expectations for the first quarter, and industry consultant Tom Murray predicts the trend will continue.
The expectation in the rail industry is that this is a temporary lull.
He says companies are using this lull to invest in rail infrastructure, expecting better times around the bend. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Original episodes of primetime TV shows have started dribbling back on the air as Hollywood has worked its way through the writer's strike. Nice for you and me, sure, but advertisers aren't all that worried about what's on now. The spots you're seeing today were bought and paid for last spring. Instead, networks and marketers are getting ready for what are called the upfronts, when the networks tell advertisers what's on, and those advertisers plunk down about $9 billion to buy time. Except that the upfronts are going to be a bit different this year, post-strike, and the difference starts this week. Joe Adalian's the TV editor at Variety. Joe, good to have you here.
Thanks, Kai.
So what is happening this week upfront-wise?
Well, what's happening is the upfront's starting about 6 weeks earlier than normal. Normally, the upfronts happen the second week in May. All the networks get together, trot out their new shows, their stars, and try to convince advertisers to start buying time for the fall. What's happening now, though, is NBC's decided to move up the process. They're going to announce their schedule this week to advertisers in New York and smaller meetings throughout the country, Chicago, Los Angeles. The other thing that's really important is they're going to present a schedule for the entire year through all of next summer, and that's a little bit different.
So the upfronts are usually these glitz and glam affairs in New York City, and you know, the networks rent out these big halls, and they put on the whole big party thing. Why are they now pulling it back?
Well, it's not being completely downsized. CBS is going to still have a big showy presentation, but they're not going to have the shrimp later on at Tavern on the Green, which is a big disappointment.
Well,
for
then
those
I'm not going
to cover that. Exactly. What's the point? There's been a trend towards keeping these presentations briefer because advertisers don't want as much razzle dazzle. They want to get just the facts. So that's going to happen. But NBC here, it depends upon whom you ask. A lot of people think NBC is just sort of making a lot of noise because, hey, they happen to be in fourth place, and this is a great way to get a head start on everybody else. Other people say, no, this is actually the first step in an important renovation of the process, that networks need to start thinking about year-round programming, that they need to start getting advertiser input earlier in the process. That's another key thing that NBC is saying about this strategy of theirs, is that they're trying to get advertisers in on the ground floor. Before everything's already done and the pilots are shot and the shows are ready, they're going to say to advertisers, well, what do you think about this Knight Rider idea we have? And maybe get some input early on.
Do you think this is going to be a permanent change to the upfronts? I mean, they've been this way for a long time.
The upfront process is pretty ingrained. Fourth quarter is still very key for advertisers, and that's still what this is all about. I don't know that what NBC is doing right now is going to completely change the process. NBC hopes so, but for right now, it's just a small step.
When these advertisers go to the upfronts, whether or not it's NBC in small groups or CBS and ABC with the whole smash, are they interested in what's going to be on Wednesday at 9 o'clock, or is it how do you deliver this demographic that I want to sell my product to?
I think they're much more interested in making sure the shows fit with the type of demographic they're trying to sell. They're commodities. They're not looking to fall in love with shows. They're looking to be convinced that the network has an idea of what kind of viewers are going to come to what show and which time slot. So this year, we'll see. We'll see because there won't be as many clips for advertisers to look at before they buy shows. They're going to be taking much more of a leap of faith that the networks will be able to deliver the right kind of viewers.
Would we even be having this conversation if there hadn't been a strike? I mean, the upfronts would have just continued, right?
Well, no. NBC says, no, we were planning to change the process anyway. NBC says this is about redefining things. And a key thing for NBC, by the way, Kai, is that what NBC is really trying to do here is they're trying to de-emphasize network television because they're still going to give a presentation in May with the other networks. But at that presentation in May, Jeff Zucker is going to bring out all the properties of NBC Universal, from USA Network to Sci-Fi to Bravo to mobile television shows that they produce. For them, it's about redefining the game and saying the upfront should not be about network television. This should be about what NBC Universal as a broad company can do for you.
Joe Dalian knows all this because he's the TV editor at Variety. Joe, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
Marketplace is supported by Shriners Hospitals for Children, providing treatment for orthopedic, burn, and spinal cord injuries at no cost to the families. More at ShrinersForKids.org. And by Putnam Investments, offering more of what you want in a retirement plan. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
This final note today, Iceland is the latest country to be caught up in the credit crunch. The central bank in Reykjavik says it's going to go after lenders for unscrupulous deals, acting like hedge funds, taking on debt, those usual kinds of things. The financial sector debt over there is just over $35 billion. That's a cool 211% of Iceland's entire GDP. Bloomberg reports today the island's lenders are in pretty much the worst shape in the entire world. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow jumped 46 points, a third of 1%. The NASDAQ up 17 points, 3/4%. The S&P 500 inched up 7 points, 1/2 of 1% there. Our producers include Caitlin Carroll, Jennifer Collins, Megan Larson, and Fiona Ng. Marketplace was created by Jim Russell. Coming up next time on the program, for Brazilians, there really is no place like home.
I'm going back, and I don't think I will be able to come again. The style of life that I want to live, it's in Brazil, not here.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.